Welcome to the Savvy Girl Podcast.
I'm Deborah, and I'm the sister who knits.
And I'm Melanie, and I'm the sister who doesn't.
Melanie?
I mean, I like to...
That's a lot. People, Melanie does knit. She just won't admit it.
I do not.
Yes,
I hate knitting.
Yes, you do.
You know that? Okay, okay. But anyway, let's get this show on the road.
Yeah, let's get going.
And I say, wait, hey, hey, it's just an ordinary day, and it's all your state of mind. At the end of the day, you just got to say it's all right.
I'm so excited that we're podcasting today. Today was an early podcast. It's Wednesday, and we've normally podcast on Friday. And Melanie called me today and said, do you think we could do it a little earlier this week? And I happily agreed. So this week, I want to thank everybody who sent us emails in the past 2 weeks and those who left comments on our website and in Ravelry. We really love the feedback. I mean, every time someone contacts us, we call each other and we talk about it and we dissect what did they say and what did they mean. I know that they say this on so many podcasts, but the fact that people are listening and tuning into the shows and enjoying what we're saying really makes a big difference.
Although I think you'd probably make me do this anyway, even if no one were listening.
Well, yeah, I didn't say we would stop. I'm just saying that it makes it so much better.
Right.
Because we read and enjoy every positive thing that we hear. And it actually gets us really excited about podcasting, and it makes us more and more creative in our planning. So thank you to everybody. Quiero también decir un gran gracias a mis nuevas amigas en Buenos Aires y los otros en mi grupo de artesanas argentinos sobre Ravelry. Aprecio mucho tu apoyo respecto a este programa. I have to say my knitting group here in Argentina and those who are long-distance group members over Ravelry have been incredibly supportive. People who don't even understand English have listened to our first two episodes of this podcast and written to me that it sounded good, although they wish they could understand what I was talking about.
Really? And somebody wrote that?
More than one person. I really think that, in my opinion, is a commitment to a community. So, as I'm sure you've figured out, Melanie and I are sisters, but there is a third child in our family. He is a tech guru, and it's thanks to him that we have a working, up-to-date website, a maintained email system, and a subscription feed. Actually, initially, we really tried to encourage him to do the show with us, but instead, Andrew's assisting us with quality control, which means that he tells us if anything sounds stupid, and he helps us with the multitude of other things that come up associated with the podcast. It's not actually silent in my house because my dog, Kythera, is lying under the table, and she's having a very active dream chasing bunnies and just making little yipping sounds, and her little feet are going in little spasms, and it's very cute.
Maybe you should tell a little bit about your dog.
I guess I haven't talked about my dog. I have a little, I call her a puppy, but she's 3 years old. And I bought her, I didn't buy her actually, I got her when I was in South Africa. Oh, in South Africa, they use a certain term for a dog that's a mix of breeds, and they call them pavement specials, as in conceived on the pavement and born on the pavement. So my dog is a pavement special. She's a beautiful mix of Jack Russell and Toy Pom, which she doesn't look like either, to be honest. Her hair is the color of a Toy Pom, but she has the energy of a Jack Russell and the jumping ability of a Jack Russell. I'm gonna be very the proud mother right now. Someone came up to me the other day and asked me what breed she was, and I said she was mixed, and someone said, really? I thought she would be a very specialized breed because of she's just so pretty. And when I said, no, that's my pavement special.
Her mom was a dog slut.
Her mom was a dog sled. Her mom, in my dog's litter, there were actually two fathers to the litter. Half of the litter came out looking like Jack Russells, and two other puppies came out, mine included, looking extremely fluffy and Toy Pom-ish. And according to the people who owned the mother, they told me that they distinctly remembered two encounters that their dog had. One was with a Jack Russell and the other one was with a Toy Pom cross. So
Deborah, this is a family show. We can't talk about that kind of thing.
Well, I said encounters. Maybe they had tea. And besides, my dog is a lady. She would never, ever engage in those types of shenanigans. Oh, there's also something that I think we should tell our listeners right now in case somebody has children in the room or in case someone is extremely sensitive. In our last podcast, we sort of introduced the feature of bringing back words, and the word that we chose today could have some sensitive meanings to it. So if you're concerned about your children learning words that you don't want them to repeat, then maybe this isn't an episode that you want to be playing out loud in front of them.
Oh, I have a piece of news. I have a new apartment, and this is big news.
No. Oh, yes, that's big news. Tell.
I don't even know if I can tell the whole story because it's long and convoluted, but basically...
I know that we have at least two people who have listened from New York because we can tell from the IP address.
And they weren't me because I'm in Canada. Yay!
And they weren't Melanie. So I'm sure you would know how difficult it is to find housing in Manhattan. And so I know I'm talking for Melanie, but I kind of like to talk. And Melanie has this thing about hearing her stories. But anyways, Melanie posted on Craigslist, and I think people should know what Craigslist is. It's basically an online classified section.
They have it for every city.
Yeah, every city has them. There's even one for Argentina. But anyway, so Melanie posted on Craigslist her interest in finding an apartment, and somebody responded. And within 5 minutes of posting this. And she said that she had an apartment available because she was moving out for maybe 8 months or so. And it turns out this place is wonderful. Why don't you talk about it?
Okay. You have to realize it is Manhattan, so things aren't the biggest or the cheapest, but it is in the middle of Harlem, which is great, right? Because it's where all the flavor is. So it's...
Well, and also it's actually a convenient area of town, too.
Right, that too.
No, yes.
No, it's right on the one train, which is good. It's in Harlem on the one train. It's a two-bedroom apartment. I'm sharing it with another friend who's a singer. I get the better bedroom. Hopefully he won't listen to this podcast.
And if he does, you're the girl, so you need more space.
Right, girl needs her space. It has living room, a dining room, and a kitchen.
Whoa! This is the first time that Melanie has had a kitchen in 4 years?
In a long time. The apartment I lived in New York last year, I believe it was 6 feet by 11 feet.
Which is equivalent to...
Maybe 8 by 11 feet. So square feet. I don't know.
Like a large closet?
It was basically the size of a walk-in closet. Mm-hmm.
You've had other acceptable living conditions over the years, but this is a really great find for New York City, for Manhattan, hey?
I know. I definitely am excited about moving in. Oh, and I forgot to mention, there's also a bathroom.
Oh, yeah. There's a bathroom.
With a clawfoot tub.
Is it really?
Yes. Oh, didn't I tell you that? I've always wanted a clawfoot tub.
Oh, that's exciting.
I know.
So that's going to be, actually, that'll probably be fun to talk about also is your move and, you know, getting set up in New York again and everything. Good things coming up
for
the future.
So you should say something about what's going on with you this week.
Okay, I have nothing. No. Because it's you in your woolly sweater and the emerald cap. Should spend the end of autumn just like that. Just less than 2 weeks ago, I took my very first spinning class. It was held in one of the shops located in the Knitter's Paradise, that is the yarn district of Buenos Aires. The class started around 10 in the morning and lasted all day until almost 5 in the afternoon. The teacher had come down from the north of Argentina and was prepared with both washed and unwashed sheep's fiber. I imagine that my class was similar to what any spinning class would be like, but I can't say for sure because I've never been to another one. We started with a lesson about types of fiber, how to select a good quality fiber, and how to wash fiber. For the washing, he actually suggested not using soap, but using only boiling water and a plastic mesh bag, sort of like an onion or potato bag you might get at a grocery store. Okay, so then we learned how to spin using a drop spindle, which was actually way easier than I expected it to be. Before, I had looked at drop spindles, and I couldn't imagine how you could take that and make yarn out of it. But once I saw him do it, of course, it was incredibly logical. The teacher had brought wheels to the class, two different types, and after learning to spin with a drop spindle, we moved on to learning about the wheels. Both of the types of wheels he brought were ones that he or people in his workshop had made by hand. They both worked basically the same way, except one was powered by a motor and the other one was run with a pedal. Please remember, I know very little about wheels, so I can't really compare this to more mainstream or commercially available wheels. But the ones he brought worked really well, and I was able to produce some very consistent and rather fine yarn on it. There were about 10 of us in the class, and we all had turns playing on the different wheels. This might sound completely immodest, but I was actually pretty good, and I was one of the better people in the class. I don't know why, but working with the pedal and feeding the fiber through consistently just seemed to be a natural movement for me. The class ended with me sitting at a wheel, some people chatting, and a group of students gathered around me watching me spin. It was actually a bit uncomfortable, but no one else wanted to turn, and I did ask. So after spinning, and after the class ended, I waved goodbye to all my new friends, and I went home that night, took about 3 minutes to think about it, and decided I needed to buy a wheel. I went online and looked at wheel prices, and I found that the handmade wheel that the teacher was offering was very inexpensive compared to the prices of other wheels online. So the next day I hopped on a bus and went back to the store and spent what I felt was a very reasonable $200 Canadian for my new baby. After carrying my wheel home on the bus, which actually wasn't as hard as you might think because the bus was pretty empty at that time of day, I spent a lovely Friday afternoon playing with some roving. Okay, but here's where I ran into challenges, and maybe you can help me. This is probably really stupid of me to ask, but I'm such a beginning spinner that the answers to these questions don't actually seem obvious to me. In the class, I was spinning with newly washed wool that hadn't been dyed. I don't even know what to call the different forms of wool. The wool in the class was just like large fluffy clouds. We didn't have to brush it or anything. What happened was I just loosened the fibers by pulling them apart and thinned the wool with my fingers as I fed it into the wheel. Now that I'm home and I'm trying to spin roving, I think that's what it's called, that I had bought at a yarn store. Okay, the only way I seem to be able to make it feed into the wheel thinly is by separating strands by hand in advance and then spinning them. I can't seem to be able to spin directly from the larger amount of fiber. This might just be a question of practice and a question of getting the hang and getting the rhythm of it. And I hope I'm explaining this properly. I wonder if maybe I'm missing the step. I don't want to always dwell on the fact that things here happen in Spanish and that my language skills are still in progress, but maybe I didn't understand everything from the class and there's an important part of this process that I'm not aware of. Can you help me? Can you tell me what I'm doing wrong? Or maybe I'm doing nothing wrong and I really just need to get a hang of using roving instead of using that. It just seemed so easy in the class. It was going so well. I would just pull fiber out of the big fluffy cloud and feed it in, and it was easy. And now I'm finding with the roving at home that it's really hard to separate it by pulling on it. I find it much easier to separate it by pulling it apart. Maybe that didn't make sense. Okay. In the class, I was able to pull directly from the big cloud into the wheel, and here I seem to have to pull strips off of the roving and then spin those strips. Okay, maybe I've really confused things. Let me know if you can help. Otherwise, I'm going to keep playing and keep reading online, and hopefully I will work it out soon. I'm going to post a few pictures of my new wheel on our website so you can see what I bought if it interests you. If you have any information about what type of wheel I bought or any hints about using it, I would love to hear from you. I've played around online and my wheel looks a little bit like a Louette S10, but any information you can give me will help. So please let me know.
Pardon me, I didn't knit that for you. I had knit it for somebody. It's a truth kept inside, I can no longer hide. Pardon me, I didn't do that for you.
The other day, Deborah reminded me that although I have been intimately involved with this knitting podcast, I haven't actually talked at all about my own knitting. Now, I do have certain rather strong opinions about spending all one's day knitting, or reading knitting books, or looking up knitting patterns, or spending all day thinking about knitting. I have knit before, and I've designed on the needles, and I do have a little bit to say about the projects that I've done. But I didn't know which one to talk about. So the other day, when I was out at lunch with my mom and my dad, I asked them what I should talk about on the next knitting podcast. My mom thought about it, and while she was thinking, my dad slathered a generous amount of margarine on his warm bun, and he turned to me, and he said,
"I don't know much about knitting, but you should appreciate margarine."
"Dad," I said, "what are you talking about?" Now, my dad's a lawyer, and he likes nothing more than to lecture on a topic that he considers extremely interesting, be it criminal law, the Canadian legal system, or in this case, margarine. And this is what I learned. Margarine was invented in France in the early 1800s, and by 1880, it was being used all over the United States and Canada. Now, the butter manufacturers had something to say about this. Apparently, all the laws we have encouraging competition in different markets don't count when you're a butter producer. Somehow, they made it illegal. They banned margarine from 1886 into 1948 in Canada. Banned. In fact, it was a felony to transport margarine across provincial lines. The only margarine that was available was bootleg margarine from Newfoundland, which, as most Canadians know, it's one of our provinces. At that point, it hadn't become a province yet, though, and the Newfoundland Butter Company, which in fact only produced margarine, made margarine from whale, seal, and fish oil and smuggled it into Canada, and it was sold then for half the price of butter. Now, during the First World War, because of butter shortages, margarine was allowed for a while, but soon it was illegal once again. Now, can you imagine arriving in jail and being thrown into a cell with a scary-looking woman named Spike? And you'd ask her, "Spike, just to make conversation, Spike, what are you in for?" And she'd say, "Oh, you know, I murdered my family, eh, with a hockey stick. And then I poached some fish, eh, and hit them with my lacrosse stick. What are you in for?" And you'd have to answer, "I sold some margarine." So by the time my dad was finished telling me all this, I realized that I just don't appreciate margarine like I should. I just thought of it as a slightly less tasty but cheaper substitute for butter. But now I realize it's a symbol for our freedom to produce, our freedom to buy, and the corruption and heavy-handedness of the evil butter lobby over our whole country. And with that in mind, I too buttered, or margarined, my loaf of bread, appreciating the freedoms for which people fought or lobbied so hard. But I guess I haven't talked about my knitting project yet. This knitting project that I want to tell you about is one of the most amazing things.
I think we're actually out of time.
Oh, you mean I can't talk about knitting?
Well, I've done a lot of talking this time, so maybe you should save it for the next time.
Okay, if you say so.
Oh, it sounds like this was a really big sacrifice for you.
Horrible. But at least you got to learn all about margarine.
Alright, today's featured yarn from my stash. I think it's best if I were to discuss a yarn that I've been working with a lot over the past 2 weeks. I don't mean to talk about another thick, thin yarn, and because last week I discussed it, but what I'm talking about this week is a very different yarn from what I discussed last time. This is 100% sheep's wool with thin sections at about a fingering or sock weight, or even smaller. And the thick sections are huge. They are larger than super bulky and much closer to the thickness of maybe my baby finger. I bought the wool about 4 months ago, and I was planning on using it on an Afghan project, but that yarn in particular didn't exactly work. So I have quite a bit of it, or I had quite a bit of it, and I was trying to find a home for it. And when I say I have a lot of yarn, I mean something like 800 grams. In a lovely army green. Okay, I know, army green doesn't seem all that appealing, but the original project was supposed to have a masculine look, so it seemed like a good idea at the time. So I've been looking at this large pile of yarn in my stash with sort of a sick feeling in my stomach for a while now. I didn't know what to do with it, but I really felt that it needed a home, and it was really taking up a lot of space. So a few weeks ago, I walked by a purse in a shop window, and then I was inspired. So in order to make the purse that I had in mind, my yarn had to be a different color than army green. The purse was is more of a clutch style and a lot more girly, and army green wasn't working. So last week, I made my very first attempt at overdyeing. I went to a Notion store, which, okay, by the way, please remind me to talk about the Notion stores here sometime, because they are something special also. Though there's so much to talk about. Okay, so what I did when I was in the Notion store was what any self-respecting adult would do. I took out my cell phone and called my mom long distance in Canada. She reminded me of basic color theory and advised me with a very strong no that I could not turn army green into light pinky purple. Well, I guess I already knew that was true, but I thought I'd try, and I figured if my mom said it was okay, then the yarn would have no choice but to comply. On my mom's knowledgeable advice, I picked a dark blue and a bright yellow, and then I trotted home for a dyeing adventure. I followed the instructions on the package. I soaked my yarn, I boiled the water, I added the dye, I submerged my yarn, and then I left it alone for a while, and when I came back, I had exactly what my mom had predicted. One pot of brighter green yarn and one pot of dark blue yarn. So I let everything cool, I skeined the yarn, I blocked it with inventive weights, because I don't have weights, so in the absence of something more logical, I hung my yarn on a door handle, I filled a jug of water to make it heavy, and I hooked the handle of the jug onto the hanging yarn. It looked crazy, but it worked. And now I have two better looking skeins of yarn that have since met their fate as attractive clutch purses. In the meantime, my Spanish teacher came over for a lesson and once again admired something that I was doing that was knitting related. I think that this time it may have been my wheel or I don't remember exactly. My teacher has been a very good sport over many months, and although she's paid to listen to me, she has actually shown a genuine interest as I babble on and on and on about different knitting projects during my twice weekly lessons. I actually often pull up projects in different stages of completion, discuss my misgivings, ask her opinion. Really, she's a Spanish teacher, she's not a knitting instructor, and she's been lovely about all this. This week, I asked her to identify something she would like, since I wanted to make her something. She had seen the French Market bag with the pattern from knitty.com that I had made for my sister a few months earlier, and she said she was still thinking about it. So then I got all excited, and we trudged to my study, which has now become my fiber room, and we picked yarn. Strangely enough, she saw the thick, thin army green and declared that she loved it. I had only dyed two out of the about 5 or 6 balls that I had, so I still had lots left over. We matched that with a worsted weight gold or maybe mustard colored yarn, and she told me to get creative with it. I tried my best to create a French Market bag with the thick, thin green stuff. For those who are not familiar with the pattern, this knitty.com pattern is constructed first by working the base of the bag in the round and increasing stitches every second row to create a flat round fabric. Then once the base is large enough, you stop increasing and just keep working in the round, creating sides that climb upwards. After about 6 rounds of the base, I realized that I was creating an extremely thick fabric and I needed to increase my stitches a lot faster. So I did the best with the yarn that I had, but I ended up creating quite a wonky and too large base. For the sides, I was having a lot of trouble working in the round with the yarn, so instead I knit 2 long scarf-like strips on straight needles and sewed them on horizontally. Then I took the gold and I basically wove it in and out in wonky patterns along the edges just to give a little bit of the gold accent. Seriously, it looked terrible. But felting fixes everything, right? So after finishing that bag, I decided that it was going to be a disaster when it was felted. So I decided I would knit a French Market bag using worsted weight wool in different colors because I had no green, but following the pattern. So I then launched into the process of knitting a whole new bag. I did it with the mustard gold color along with the browns and a little bit of a cream or a white color. The unfelted bag actually looked pretty good. The color choices were perhaps not to everybody's taste, but I think they looked classy and I was pretty happy with them. So tonight, before I started recording, it was time for me to felt. So I took both the disastrous green bag that was lumpy and with these strange mustard woven in patterns along the sides, and then I took my perfectly acceptable looking yellow and brown bag, threw them both into the washer, put it through two cycles, pulled them out, and guess which one looked good? It was not the one that had followed the pattern. Strangely enough, the green bag felted nicely for just a very textured, interestingly shaped bag, and the yellow yarn that I had woven in and out just gave some interesting spots of yellow without being really obvious or really out there. And the market bag felted, or the normal French market bag felted in the strangest way to make an extremely large base and extremely short sides. So it looks more like, yeah, I don't have anything to compare to. It's just the completely wrong shape, and it didn't felt nicely certain portions. I guess I shouldn't use different types of yarns or different yarn companies of yarns. But it just doesn't look good. So in the end, the gift from my Spanish teacher is going to be the wonky green disaster, which actually has turned out well, and then the French market bag that I invested a proper amount of time in, that's the yellow and brown one, is going to go into the pile of things to turn into a rug someday. And I guess that's all I have to say about that army green yarn, because hopefully I'm pretty much finished with it.
I like knitting and the simpler arts. Half a dozen needles, an ounce or two of wool. Fills my cup of happiness, chock full. I'm a little nitwit, knitting all the day. That's how I keep dull care away. Hemstitch, lockstitch, plain and purl. A pleasant occupation for a good little girl.
Welcome to our Bringing It Back feature of the Savvy Girl podcast, where we pick a word from old and we bring it back into...
new.
Into use. Should I try that again?
I had an intro written, but you can
just do it. Oh, no, go ahead.
My intro is, one of the perks to being savvy girls is that we strive to set trends and influence people. One of the ways in which we do this, as you've likely noticed on our earlier shows, is that we bring words back.
We're bringing it back.
Vocabulary is fluid.
Bring it back.
Vocabulary is fluid, and as shiny new words come into our daily speech, others are relegated to tragic obscurity. But we're working to change that. Each show, we're going to choose one word that deserves, in our opinion, to make a comeback.
In order for this to work, you have to take the words that we give you and use them. Try to use them in a sentence during the week, or try to get other people saying them also. We are starting a movement, people.
So last show, what was the word we had as our bringing it back word?
I vaguely remember learning the word ought, meaning?
Zero.
And remembering the word whack, as in...
So, Deborah, did you have any chance to use either of those words this week? Let's hear an example.
Yeah, I don't have one.
Just make one up! She had nothing, Mom. Nothing. Our one listener is sitting on the couch and shaking her head at you.
Mel, did you come up with a new word this week?
I'm not there yet.
Oh. Okay, you go ahead.
I wrote a script, man.
I'm ruining it all.
Well, web savvy knitters, you must be simply burning to know what has been chosen for this week's word. I picked this one.
Okay, but seriously, if you're actually burning, go to a doctor. That's not healthy.
You may be allergic to your wool.
Or you might have caught something nasty.
Deborah, it's a family show.
Not anymore.
We'll get to that. Back in the day, people used to use a ton of strange phrases. Ever so lovely is seldom used today, or even cry you mercy. But they're not completely obsolete. Other words or phrases, like the word relic, have had their day and have retired gracefully. But there are yet other words whose meanings have been twisted so much that the original can no longer be used. Until, I hope, today. Now, I'm not even going to touch on the current meaning of the word, as this is a podcast with a family rating. But the old definition, according to the English Synonyms and Antonyms by James Champlin Ferdland. Oh, I didn't say what our word was.
We have to keep that in also. Okay, Mel, so what's the word? Da 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 da!
Ejaculate.
Good word.
According to the English synonyms and antonyms.
Go ahead, serious. Okay, let's talk about some ejaculate.
To ejaculate is to throw out brief, disconnected, but coherent utterances of joy, regret, and especially of appeal. In prayer, the use of such devotional utterances has received the special name of ejaculatory prayer.
Oh, no. We can't put that in.
It's from the dictionary.
And yet it's so dirty.
One might ejaculate with no thought of others' presence, according to the dictionary. But wait, angry mothers, don't send us scathing comments just yet. The first time that I encountered this word was in the 19th century children's book, The Five Little Peppers Midway by Margaret Sidney. The passage read... I can't read this! Okay.
I was pretty taken aback about the point about ejaculating in public without any notice to people nearby. But go ahead, I don't think it can get any worse.
Maybe Mom has to read it.
Okay, Mom, okay. Read it, give it to Mom.
You have to stop laughing.
Okay.
Heavens, cried Mr. King. He was glad to find he could ejaculate so much as he tremblingly worked his way out.
In the book, elderly gentleman Horatio King has been taken for a rough buggy ride, and he is so shaken by the horse's mad dash that he finds that he can barely stand. There is nothing shocking or inappropriate about it at all.
Oh my goodness.
I went hunting, and I found a few more literary examples of ejaculation. This first one is from G.K. Chesterton, A Critical Study by Julius West. It is possible that the critics of the 21st century, as they turn over the musty pages of the Yellow Book, will ejaculate with feeling. The second is from In the Tale of the Peacock. Was it to end in death or release? Who knows? They merely shrug their shoulders and ejaculate.
Well, what's she gonna do? Just shrug and ejaculate. I have a question.
Yes?
But are you finished? Are you finished?
No, there's three more.
Okay, go ahead.
The next is from Scottish Ghost Stories. I was so charmed with the scent that, alas, forgetful of my manners, I gave a loud sniff and with a rapturous smile ejaculated.
Oh, no.
Hello, I ejaculated, interrupting Helly Brown for the first time since he began. And the last one is from The Lost City. And then the marvelous truth flashed upon the brain of Phaeton Featherwit, almost robbing him of all powers of speech. Still, he managed to jerkily ejaculate.
Oh, no. Okay, here's my question now, though. How exactly did you find all of those quotes? Did you do an internet search for ejaculate?
No, I think I would have found different things had I done it.
Well, I was just thinking how many porn sites you had to wade through in order to find children's literature.
There is a surprising amount of children's literature online that makes full use of the word ejaculate.
Okay, so now, our listeners, I suppose we have to use the word ejaculate in a sentence. In this meaning, of course, because this is a family podcast, or at least not an explicit podcast, so, ejaculate away.
It's neat and it's sweet, it's a ding-dong treat. Little socks for little feet, just sitting with your knitting all day long. You know, knitting's friendly and knitting's fun.
Knitting's good for everyone, and that is why we sing this knitting song.
With knit one, purl two, what's a knitter gonna do with a gall? Darn, ball of yarn, and stitch three, drop four, pitch that mitten out the door right now. With knit one, purl two.
Next week on the Savvy Girls Podcast,
I talk about going yarn diving in Montevideo.
Ooh, is that like dumpster diving?
Pretty close, actually.
I talk about a strange thing people used to knit.
I'm going to blab even more about my knitting projects. And we're going to look at another story or poem from the past.
Happy knitting!
See you then!
Would look silly without lime green stripes.
Well,
Don't shout.
I'll shout if I want to. And do you know why?
Why?